Well, again, it's good to see you here on the Sabbath day, the seventh Sabbath on the count towards Pentecost. 7 weeks are complete, and tomorrow is the 50th day. Now, today on this seventh Sabbath in our count towards the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of First Fruits, and the Feast of the 50th day, I thought it might be helpful to review some basic instructions on how to count to Pentecost. You know, unlike the other holy days where God tells us exactly what day on which his appointed time should be observed, you know, we keep the Passover on the 14th of the first month, we keep the Feast of Trumpets on the first day of the seventh month, we keep the Day of Atonement on the 10th day of the seventh month. Unlike those instructions, as you know, for Pentecost, we are instructed to count the days or count the weeks or count the Sabbaths to bring us to the 50th day. And indeed, the Greek word Pentecost means 50th. So let's begin with Leviticus chapter 23, if you could turn over there. We'll begin by simply reading the basic instructions that God gives Moses and Israel on how to count the days towards Pentecost, so that when you reach the 50th day, you are in fact on that appointed time, that moed that God has ordained as his appointed time. So let's pick it up in verse 15, Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 15. And you shall count unto you from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering. 7 Sabbaths shall be completed, even unto the day after the 7th Sabbath. You shall number 50 days, and you shall offer a new grain offering to the Eternal. Now, as we read those instructions, you'll find that there are several ways that we could do this count so that we arrive on the 50th day. Notice you're instructed to count 50 days. You're also instructed to count 7 Sabbaths. In Deuteronomy, we'll see that they actually use the word weeks, so we're instructed to count the weeks. The end point, we're told, is to coincide with the day after the 7th Sabbath. And so with all those methods of counting, the goal is to come to an agreement and to arrive on the correct day, the 50th day, which is the Feast of Pentecost and God's appointed time. Now, before we get into the technical details here, such as examining Hebrew words and their usages, let's begin with some simple concepts. And we'll start with the simple, and then we'll move to the complex. We'll also start with some basic foundational assumptions. And the first assumption that I would like to establish is that when it comes to God's basic instructions in his law, God is clear and specific. Now, some people might argue that the scriptures can be vague, and in some cases it's hard to understand. And perhaps that's true when it comes to like prophecy or parables, but not with God's laws. In my observation, when it comes to basic instructions within God's laws, God is clear and he's precise and he's detailed. Okay, so let's look at these basic instructions. And before we look at Hebrew words, and let me just ask you, and let me ask the children here, how simple would you find these instructions? You know, if God were to tell you, you know, I want you to keep the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. I want you to keep a holy day on the 15th day of the first month. I want you to keep the unleavened bread, the days of unleavened bread for 7 days and then have a holy day on the 7th day. But during all of that, I want you to count from the day following the Sabbath. I want you to count 7 Sabbaths. I want you to count 7 weeks, and I want you to observe the holy day on the day following the 7th Sabbath, which is also the 50th day. Are those instructions clear? Are they precise? Are you confused in any way? What day would you begin to count from? God says to count from the day following the Sabbath. And which day would that be? Take some time and think about it. Think about it carefully. And while you're thinking about that, let me introduce the controversy to you. Now, if you were to look on the Jewish calendar, and you can do this on Google. You can pull it up on Google. Simply do a search for Jewish Holidays 2023. You'll see that the holiday of Shavuot was Friday, May 26th, which began at sunset the evening before. Shavuot is derived from the Hebrew word Shabuah, or Shavua. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but I have the spelling here. It's S-A-B-U-A. I'm going to say Shavuah. I think the B is like a V, but never mind. So Shavuah is translated as the word week, a generic word for week. So the holy day for the Jewish people is called the Feast of Weeks. And that is, of course, a correct title. But for them, they observed it yesterday. They started the sunset before, and they observed it yesterday. And this day coincides with the sixth day of the third month on the Hebrew calendar, the sixth of Sivan. Now, every year it occurs on the same date on the Hebrew calendar, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But first I want to go back and ask you, and ask the children here, when we begin the count from the morrow after the Sabbath, what does the word Sabbath mean to you? The Sabbath is the Sabbath, right? Even though you know that it's entirely correct to refer to God's annual holy days as annual Sabbaths. You know, the first day of unleavened bread is an annual Sabbath. The last day of unleavened bread is an annual Sabbath. Even though you know this to be true, yet if I were to say in the midst of all that, in the midst of the spring holy days between Passover and the last day of unleavened bread, if I were to say, hey, let's get together for lunch on the Sabbath, you're going to assume that I mean the weekly Sabbath, right? Matthew McDonald works on putting the speaking schedule together for us. And today I was assigned to speak on the Sabbath. But what if we showed up today and I had no sermon ready to give to you? You know, Matthew rushes over to me and says, Lynn, you're up. You've got the sermon. And I say, no, I don't. You assigned me to speak on the Sabbath. And he says, yes, today is the Sabbath. And I say, ah, but tomorrow is also the Sabbath, right? It's the annual Sabbath of Pentecost. Therefore, I plan to speak tomorrow. You see, Matthew wasn't clear enough. He told me I was speaking on the Sabbath. He didn't say the weekly Sabbath. He didn't say the annual Sabbath. He simply said the Sabbath. So I plan to speak tomorrow. That's not going to go over too well, is it? Now, is it that simple? You know, I know the Hebrew language is different from the English. I know the ancient Hebrew mindset is different from the way we think. But is it really that different? You know, I'm drawn back to my first point in that when it comes to God's law, God is clear and he's specific and he's precise. He doesn't leave much room for doubt. So in order for the Jewish people to arrive on the sixth day of the third month every year without fail, they have to start their count on the morrow after the annual Sabbath, that is the first day of unleavened bread. You know, for them it's so painfully obvious that God must have meant the first annual holy day when he said the morrow after the Sabbath. But is it painfully obvious to you? You know, we've read the instructions together. You know, what am I missing here? Why is it so painfully obvious that we assume that the first annual holy day is the Sabbath in question? So let's assume then that perhaps they have a valid argument. The holy days are indeed called annual Sabbaths, so technically they are Sabbaths. If God meant for us to begin the count after a day other than the weekly Sabbath, well, then we have a problem here. We have a problem of the law being vague and unclear because the passage itself does not specify which Sabbath we're to begin the count from if the three Sabbaths in question are of equal consideration. You know, according to this reasoning, the count could begin from the first day of unleavened bread. It could begin from the weekly Sabbath, or it could begin from the last day of unleavened bread. Any one of those three options would be valid because God doesn't spell it out. He leaves us with a 1 in 3 chance of getting it right. Now, I'll tell you what, if it were up to me, if God told me to go ahead and organize the count so that we should begin when, organize when the count should begin and when Pentecost should end up, you know, if he told me I could go ahead and pick one of the three options for counting the days, I'd pick the last day of unleavened bread. That's just me. You know, because the spring holy days begin with the Passover and they end with the last day of unleavened bread. You know, I want that to be one nice long party, right? 8 days of feasting and fun. I don't want to start the harvest in the middle of that. Let's party and have a good time. And then after the last day of unleavened bread, the morrow after the annual Sabbath, we'll begin our count, 49 days, 7 weeks, and on the 50th day, we'll have the next holy day. Doesn't that make the most logical sense? But of course, that would be wrong. And why would that be wrong? Because I didn't take into account the meaning of the Passover and the death and resurrection of the Savior and the necessity of 3 days and 3 nights in the tomb and any longer and why any longer than that in the tomb and his body would have seen corruption. You see, under my plan, my logical, well-thought-out plan, Jesus Christ would have been in the tomb from the end of the Passover to the end of the last day of unleavened bread, the day following the last day of unleavened bread, a full 8 days or perhaps 9 days. So let's scrap the Lynn Leiby plan, okay, and let's go with the scripture plan. How does that sound? The Bible says to begin the count from the morrow after the Sabbath. Now, it doesn't tell you which Sabbath because it doesn't have to. The way that the Sabbath is described in Leviticus 23 makes it obvious and clear. And let me show you why. Drop down to verse 24. Notice what it says here about the Feast of Trumpets in verse 24. Speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. Okay, so God calls the Feast of Trumpets a Sabbath. A Sabbath rest. Isn't that interesting? Let's drop down to verse 32. Speaking about the Day of Atonement. Notice what God says here about that day in verse 32. It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls on the ninth day of the month at evening. From evening to evening, you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So the Day of Atonement is a Sabbath rest, just as the Feast of Trumpets is a Sabbath. Let's drop down to verse 39. Verse 39, also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast to the Lord for 7 days. On the first day, there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day, a Sabbath rest. So we see here that the Feast of Tabernacles is a Sabbath rest, and the eighth day is a Sabbath rest. So all the fall holy days are called specifically Sabbath rests. So why then are not the spring holy days called Sabbath rests? Notice back here in verses 7 and 8. Go back up to verses 7 and 8. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work in it, but you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Eternal for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. So it's a holy convocation with no customary work on both days. Clearly that's a Sabbath rest in the strictest definition. And yet God avoids using the word Shabbat here. And why do you suppose that is? You know, is that randomness? Is it arbitrary? God calls the other holy days Sabbath rests, but he doesn't use the word Shabbat to describe these days. Why? Again, rule number one, God is not vague and imprecise when it comes to his basic instructions in his law. So why do you suppose he avoided the term Shabbat in the case of describing the spring holy days when clearly he does use the word Shabbat to describe the fall holy days? Well, because God isn't vague and he isn't unclear with his law and he avoids confusion. And contained within his instructions for the spring holy days is to begin the count after the Sabbath. After the Sabbath. Notice it doesn't say a Sabbath. The Feast of Trumpets is a Sabbath. The Day of Atonement is a Sabbath. The Feast of Tabernacles is a Sabbath. The eighth day is a Sabbath. And why a Sabbath? Because it's one of many Sabbaths. It's plural. But the Sabbath in the instructions for counting the Pentecost is singular. And when God says the Sabbath, he is speaking in the singular. And the singular Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread has to be the weekly Sabbath. And to further underscore that point, God does not use the word Shabbat to describe the first or last day of unleavened bread. Now, to me, that is very compelling evidence. Even though they're technically Sabbaths, God doesn't use the word. You see what I'm driving at here? I can't say it's dogmatic. You know, I have some speculation in there. We need some more information. So let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's take another look at the instructions here. We're told in verses 15 and 16, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Even unto the day after the 7th Sabbath, you shall number 50 days. So how do you get around the fact that the day after the 7th Sabbath is the 50th day? I mean, that seals the deal, right? There's only one way you can count 7 Sabbaths and have the 50th day on the morrow after the 7th Sabbath, right? Well, that depends on how you define the word Sabbath. So there are two Hebrew words that I'd like to bring to your attention now, and those words are Shabbat and Shabuah, which I've already mentioned. I think the word Shabbat is easy enough to translate. It's the Sabbath. But Shabuah simply means week, Shavuah. And as I've already mentioned, the Jewish name for their Pentecost holy day is Shavuot. So the Hebrew has a word specifically for Sabbath, and it has a word specifically for week. In order for you to conclude that you should begin the count on the morrow after following the first day of unleavened bread, then the word for Sabbath here has to not mean Sabbath as in the seventh day of the week or the annual holy day, but it has to mean week in the general sense. So count seven Sabbaths simply means count 7 weeks. Now, is that a plausible argument to you? Now, I don't begin to assume that I can argue with a trained Hebrew scholar on how to define and use Hebrew words. But what I do when I come across questionable Hebrew words is I'll do a quick search to see how God uses the words elsewhere in the scriptures. At least that's a starting point for understanding how words can be used. And if I see that God uses the word like Shabbat to describe a general week elsewhere in the scriptures, well, then I can say, okay, yes, you're right. You have a valid point. The Sabbath could mean the end of the week. Even if the end of the week is Wednesday, we'll call it the Sabbath. Well, guess what? God never uses the word Shabbat for the general word week anywhere in the scriptures. The word Shabbat occurs 111 times in 89 verses of the Hebrew scriptures. I went through them all. And God does not use the word Shabbat because he already has a word for week, and it is Shavuah. So let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy, the 16th chapter. We'll see here in Deuteronomy that it is correct to state that we are to count 7 weeks. And the Hebrew word is Shavuah. It's the generic word for week. So does that mean it's okay to start the count from any day in the week and then count 7 weeks from any random day? Well, let's read here in Deuteronomy chapter 16. We'll pick it up in verse 9. Verse 9, you shall count 7 weeks for yourself. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the grain. Then you shall keep the feast of weeks to the eternal your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give as the eternal your God blesses you. So there it is. That's where the Jewish people get their title for the Feast of Pentecost. Hag Shavuah, the Feast of Weeks. So Deuteronomy doesn't tell us to count Sabbaths. It says count the weeks. So that validates their point, right? Well, we have a problem here. If we were to use Deuteronomy to establish our doctrine, if we had no other instructions on how to count Pentecost except for what is written here in Deuteronomy, well, what's missing from the equation? God says to count the weeks. He says to start the count from the time that you put the sickle to the grain. Now, what's missing? The correct day on when to put the sickle to the grain. We're missing some vital information here. We're missing the starting point. You see, Deuteronomy is a book of summary for God's law. You know, it's written 40 years later from when Moses wrote Exodus and Leviticus and of course, Numbers was a process, but Deuteronomy was written 40 years later before they went into the Promised Land. Now, you can use Deuteronomy to establish doctrine, obviously. But in the case where there is missing information, you have to go back to the earlier instructions to fill in the blanks. And in order to know where to place the starting point for when to put the sickle to the grain, you have to go back to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23. Now, the other example of where Shavuah is used in the generic as the generic word for week is in Leviticus chapter 12. And you don't have to turn over there, but that's where God gives instructions for women giving birth and their customary impurity to last for 2 weeks. So in that case, you know where the starting point for a woman's impurity is, right? I mean, it's the day she gives birth. The baby is born, and she goes 2 weeks from that starting point, regardless of whether it's a Monday or a Wednesday or a Thursday, she goes 2 weeks. So the issue with Deuteronomy 16 is that you need that starting point to count 7 weeks. You need a starting point from when to put the sickle to the grain. And of course, like I said, that's given in Leviticus 23. The sickle goes to the grain on the morrow after the Sabbath. They conduct a wave sheaf ceremony of offering the first of the first fruits of the harvest, and then they begin 7 weeks of harvest. They complete that by the seventh Sabbath, and following that is the 50th day of celebration. So is it correct to refer to the day as the Feast of Weeks? Well, sure it is. If you start the count from the morrow after the Sabbath, and then you count seven Sabbaths, that is 7 weeks. That is correct. Seven complete weeks. We're not violating the meaning of the Hebrew word Shavua when we do that. But if you begin the count in the middle of the week, and then you claim that you're keeping a holy day on the morrow after the seventh Sabbath, when in fact that seventh Sabbath is not a holy Sabbath, but just any random day of the week, then you're violating the meaning of the word Shabbat, which God never does anywhere else in the scriptures. Let me underscore that point. But again, who am I to challenge the Hebrew scholars that claim that Shabbat can be used as a week? And in fact, not the Sabbath day. Who am I to challenge them, even though God doesn't do it anywhere else? If only I had something that was more like rock-solid doctrine. Well, in fact, we do have rock-solid doctrine. The simple disciples of Jesus Christ has a trump card that trumps the Hebrew scholars. And let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians, the second chapter. We'll see here that in Ephesians that when we put Jesus Christ into the mix, then we have a sure foundation on where to build solid doctrine. So Ephesians chapter 2, and we'll read verses 19 through 22. Now therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom also you are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. So we're to look to the holy scriptures of the prophets and the Greek scriptures of the apostles, and we're to view it all from the foundation of Jesus Christ. And how does that work in this study on how to count to Pentecost? Well, let's turn over to Mark chapter 12. Mark, the 12th chapter. Quite simply, we look to the words of Jesus Christ himself. Jesus Christ gives us the key to this whole debate by giving us one very important piece of data. And let's notice it here in Mark chapter 12. Very complex mathematical equation that Jesus Christ is going to give us here. We'll pick it up in verse 38 of Mark chapter 12. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." But he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except for the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." That's the key right there. 3 days and three nights. We know for a fact that Jesus Christ died towards the end of the Passover on the 14th. We know for a fact that the first day of unleavened bread follows, and that they wanted him down off the cross and into the tomb before that annual Sabbath began. We know for a fact that the women bought and prepared spices on the day between the two Sabbaths. We know for a fact that Mary Magdalene came to the tomb on the day after the weekly Sabbath. And if you were present for my sermonette, which I gave exactly 7 weeks ago, then you know that Matthew chapter 28, where it describes the first day of the week, Matthew is in fact describing the first of the weeks. That is the first day of the count towards Pentecost, which is the wave sheaf ceremony. You know for a fact that Jesus Christ is the first of the first fruits, and therefore he's the fulfillment of the wave sheaf ceremony. Now, if you know all this to be true, then there is only one way that you can get 3 days and three nights between Passover and the wave sheaf ceremony. And that is to have Passover occur on a Wednesday and have the wave sheaf ceremony occur on the morrow after the weekly Sabbath. There is no other way. If you conduct the wave sheaf ceremony on the day immediately following the first day of unleavened bread, then no matter how you slice it or dice it, Jesus Christ would have been in the tomb for 36 hours. And that is, coincidentally, the same length of time that mainstream Christianity gives it with their Good Friday and Easter Sunday scenario. But Jesus Christ tells us that he would be in the tomb for 3 days and three nights. And that is rock solid doctrine, upheld by the Hebrew scriptures of the prophets, the Greek scriptures of the apostles, with Jesus Christ being the foundation and the chief cornerstone. So we have the correct starting point. It is the morrow after the weekly Sabbath, during the days of unleavened bread. But what about the end point? Now, some of you may be familiar with the issue of Sunday versus Monday, Pentecost. That might be before many of your time. I think it's before my time, so I'm almost 60. So I'm pretty sure maybe it's before everyone's time here. So, unless you're Mr. Wright, it's probably not before his time. So. Now, the Worldwide Church of God for decades kept a Monday Pentecost until it was revealed that their reckoning was wrong. We started on the correct day, but somehow we ended up with confusion on the end point. Now, how could that be? Well, let's turn over to Leviticus chapter 23. Back to Leviticus 23. I think we moved away from there, but we've been spending most of our time there. What we're going to see here is how easy it is to get tripped up over the simplest of mistakes. But when we see that we made a mistake, what is the proper thing to do? The proper thing is to admit the mistake and then make the correction, which is exactly what the church did when the mistake came to light. So what happened? Well, the simple mistake is found in the meaning of the word from. So let's notice it here in verse 15, Leviticus 23 and verse 15. And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. So how do we interpret the word from here? It's simple, right? Start on day 1, count 7 days to the Sabbath, count 7 Sabbaths or 49 days, have a holy day on the morrow following the 7th Sabbath, and you've got the 50th day. Where could we possibly go wrong? Well, let's have a little fun. We'll have a little bit of fun with some math and semantics here. Scenario 1. You decide to go on a weekend vacation getaway. You check into the hotel on a Friday, and you plan to check out on a Sunday. You're staying in the hotel from Friday to Sunday. From Friday to Sunday. When you go to check out, you see that the hotel clerk has charged you for 3 days. And you say, wait a minute, we checked in on Friday and we checked out on Sunday. That's 2 days. Why am I being charged for 3 days? And the clerk says, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 3 days. And you say, no, from Friday to Saturday is 1 day. From Saturday to Sunday is 2 days. So if from Friday to Saturday is 1 day for you when you go to check out of a hotel, then what about how you count to Pentecost? The morrow after the Sabbath is the first day of the week. If you count from the first day of the week to the second day of the week, you have 1 day. So Sunday to Monday is 1 day. Monday to Tuesday is the second day. Tuesday to Wednesday is the third day. Wednesday to Thursday is the fourth day. Thursday to Friday is the fifth day. Friday to the Sabbath is the sixth day. Saturday to Sunday is the seventh day. Multiplied times 7 weeks, and you still have the 49th day occurring on a Sunday. So what day is the 50th day? It's Monday, right? It's all in the semantics, isn't it? How do we define the word from? Now, you think that's a ridiculous debate to have, right? Until you're standing before that hotel clerk and you're arguing about paying for 3 days instead of 2 days for your hotel reservations. My wife just made our hotel reservations for Jamaica, so for the feast this year. Just this past week, she did that. I don't recall what she has us paying per night to keep the feast in Jamaica, but I know it's not Motel 6. So trust me when I say I hope we get the count right and that we're paying for the right days for our stay in Jamaica. Now, part of our solution to this, again, is to realize that we're debating semantics here. The English language adds a little confusion to the mix. When you go to the Hebrew, you'll see that the phrase, from the morrow after, translates from one word, which means tomorrow. So the word from is added in the English to help us make sense of the phrase. So from Sunday to Monday is 1 day, but if I just said tomorrow, that too is 1 day. You know, Sunday is 1 day. Let's look at another example of having fun with math and how semantics can play tricks on us when we're doing simple math. I've had the opportunity to provide many of our young people with their first summer jobs here with my business, you know. Caleb Hooser is going to be joining me this summer, and that happens this Tuesday following Memorial Day. So we're ready to hit the ground running. Now let's say that instead of doing hourly wages, I'm just going to pay my employees a daily wage, $100 per day to come out and work for me. So Caleb, you're out there in the congregation. I see you there. Let's do some math. Your first full week this summer starts on Monday, June the 5th. You'll complete your first full week on Friday, June the 9th, Monday the 5th, Tuesday the 6th, Wednesday the 7th, Thursday the 8th, Friday the 9th. Are you with me so far? Now, to compute my payroll, I'm simply going to take the number of the day, Friday the 9th, and I'm going to subtract the number of the first day, which is Monday the 5th. That sounds fair, right? 9 minus 5 should give us the balance of what I owe you. 9 minus 5 equals 4. 4 times $100 per day equals $400. So for your 5-day week at $100 per day, I'm going to pay Caleb $400. How do you feel about that? So Caleb comes to me, Mr. Leiby, I'm supposed to get $500 and you only paid me $400. And I say, nope, the computer formula, which can't be wrong, subtracted the number of the first day from the number of the last day, and the balance has to be the right amount. But I'm not convincing Caleb, am I? And he's adamant that he is being cheated out of $100 every week. So finally, I just relent. I say, fine, Caleb, you do the math for me, and then I'll pay you accordingly. So he says, okay, Mr. Leiby, Monday's the 5th day of the week. I work for you for 5 days. 5 plus 5 equals 10. Therefore, the 5th working day is the 10th day of the month. I'd like $100 for each numbered day. The 5th day is 100. The 6th day is 200. The 7th day is 300. The 8th day is 400. The 9th day is 500. And the 10th day is 600. $600. You owe me $600 for the week. Why does it seem like I'm in an Abbott and Costello movie? That's good math for Caleb. Not so good for me. How about we simply count the days? You see, when we do subtraction, we lose a day. When we do addition, we gain a day. But when we count the days, we end up with the right amount of days. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That's 5 days. I pay you $500 and we're good. The key here is to understand with counting that we're being inclusive. We include the day that we start on, begin the count from the morrow after the Sabbath, and then we are inclusive when we count the morrow after the Sabbath as day one. When we go from Sunday to Monday and say that's day one, then we're not including Sunday into the count. Sunday and Monday are 2 days, but from Sunday to Monday is 1 day, depending on how we view it. You see, it's all in the semantics, right? And understanding the meaning of the word from, and how easy it would be to make that kind of a mistake. But you might say, no, that's too easy. There's no way I would make that mistake. All right, let me give you one more example. I'm going to quote to you an excerpt from a sermon that I gave in Dallas in 2012. So more than 10 years ago, I gave this sermon. And within this quote is a doctrinal error. Now, I want you to listen carefully and see if you can spot the error. So what I was trying to demonstrate in this segment of my sermon was the doctrinal truth that Jesus Christ was crucified on a Wednesday, and he was in the tomb for 3 days and 3 nights, and how it all works with the 2 Sabbaths and the Friday in between, and all that. So, quoting from that sermon, quote, "A careful study of the gospel accounts shows very conclusively that Jesus Christ was crucified on a Wednesday, and that for the women to have bought and prepared the oils and spices for anointing Jesus' body after a Sabbath and before a Sabbath, there had to be 2 Sabbaths involved. Thursday was an annual Sabbath, or the first day of unleavened bread. And let's see how that's described in John chapter 19. John the 19th chapter. And how do we know that for absolute certainty? How do we know beyond the shadow of a doubt that the day dawning after Jesus Christ died was a holy day? Well, because we know for absolute certainty that he died on the Passover. No one debates that. And what day do we know for absolute certainty follows the Passover? Every year without fail, what follows the 14th day of the first month? The 15th day of the first month. Isn't that amazing how that works? And Leviticus chapter 23 is very clear that the 15th day and the 22nd day are holy days. They are annual Sabbaths. And then I go on to quote John chapter 19 and verse 31. Therefore, because it was the preparation day that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. End quote. Okay, who spotted the doctrinal error? Anyone? You can just raise your hand if you've spotted it. No one spotted the doctrinal error. See how tricky this is? And I gotta say, I've held on to this error probably more than 30 years in God's church. I gave that sermon more than 10 years ago. No one pointed the error out to me then either. It's only been recently, and I'd say within the past 3 or 4 years, that I realized the mistake that I've held on to for 30 plus years in God's church. And I remembered giving this sermon, and I knew what I said there. I said, and Leviticus 23 is very clear that the 15th day and the 22nd day are holy days. Really? Is Leviticus 23 clear about that? No, it is not. Leviticus 23 says that we should observe the 15th day on the first month as a holy day, and that we should eat unleavened bread for 7 days, then have another holy day on the 7th day. It does not say the 22nd is the 7th day. It says 7 days from the 15th day is a holy day. Okay, so let's do the math. The 15th day is the first day. The 16th is the second. The 16th is the second. The 17th is the third. The 18th is the fourth. The 19th is the fifth. The 20th is the sixth. And, can I have a drum roll? The 21st is the seventh. What is the holy day? The 21st. Well, what's the 22nd? Not the holy day. How could I have made that mistake? How could I have held that mistake for more than 30 years? Well, because the 15th day is the first day, and I added 7 days. In my head, I just did 15 plus 7 equals 22. I didn't count inclusively. I did addition, and therefore I gained a day. But it was reading the account in Exodus where I saw in Exodus chapter 12 and verse 18... Again, I only read this maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Of course, I've read Exodus 12 hundreds of times, but your lazy mind, you know, you think you've read something over and over again. But this past time, 2 or 3 years ago, it actually jumped out at me. The scripture actually states that the seventh day of unleavened bread is the 21st day of the month. Now, what's interesting and maybe a little pathetic is that for a split second when I read that, in my mind, I actually said, that's not right. Yeah, for a split second, I actually said in my mind that the scriptures were wrong because it did not coincide with my preconceived notion. I only did it for a split second. So fortunately, I decided to do a little more in-depth mathematical calculation to figure out that the seventh day from the 15th is the 21st day and not the 22nd day. And incidentally, you do see what that proves here, right? If God says to begin the first day of unleavened bread on the 15th and to count 7 days, and you have the last day on the 21st, then that proves inclusive counting. That proves Sunday, Pentecost, is the correct day. But that's a good example of how easy it is to come to wrong conclusions from the simplest of foundational mistakes. And not only did I hold that mistake for 30 years, but I preached it from the lectern. Doctrinal error from the lectern. Is Jesus Christ going to reject me because of this mistake? Lynn Leiby, for decades as a member of my church, you thought that the seventh day of unleavened bread was the 21st day of the month. You taught it to hundreds of my brethren. What do you have to say for yourself? I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I didn't count inclusively when I counted from the 15th day of the first month. Not good enough. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Now, I'm confident that that is not how that conversation is going to go. And why do I know that? Because I believe in a God of mercy, and I believe in a God of grace. Now, I've heard critics of our church say, well, the WCG used to keep Pentecost on Monday when the correct day is Sunday. How can that be? How can they have been the true church of God if they weren't keeping the correct day? And the answer is quite simple. They made a mistake. And when they realized the mistake, they fixed it. Now, what if I told that same critic that I believe that the church doesn't make mistakes? That anything that came from Herbert Armstrong was 100% correct because he was God's end time apostle and therefore he never made mistakes. Well, he'd conclude that I was in a cult. Well, you can't have it both ways. Either God's true church never makes mistakes, or sometimes they do make mistakes. And if you ever want to know if the church of God can make mistakes, just read Revelation chapters 2 and 3. Right? The message to the seven churches. God's church makes mistakes. But the key is that when we've seen that we've made a mistake, we change. And the controversy surrounding the Monday versus Sunday Pentecost for me only proves that God's church is capable of changing when it sees that something is in error. And that is a healthy sign to have in God's church. Today is the seventh Sabbath from our count, from the morrow after the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. We counted 50 days. We counted seven Sabbaths. We counted 7 weeks. We counted from the morrow after the Sabbath using inclusive counting so that when the 50th day would follow the seventh Sabbath. And tomorrow we arrive on that 50th day, which is the Feast of Weeks.